Blog Talk Radio.
Introduction definitely gets me going. I hope everyone is ready for a blessed day. Thank you so much for tuning in to Locker Talk Radio. When you catch me right now on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network, I am your host, Barry Barnes, founder of Locker-Report.com, where you will find about NFL players, stars, basically, of tomorrow, today. Thank you for tuning in. It's always blessed to be able to talk to you guys before y'all weekend start. And next week, football season is back. Yes, I know it's just a preseason. I know that it's just a Hall of Fame game where the Baltimore Ravens will face the Chicago Bears. I know a lot of consensus football fans out there are not excited about the preseason, but I love the preseason football because I understand the context of the preseason, basically. And for someone who worked close with a lot of undrafted players, I'm using a vehicle of the NFL Regional Combine. It's always a pleasure and always a desire to see the guys who you evaluated and written about and promoted during the course of the year when they finally made a team, to see what they're going to do in the preseason to really cement their chances for the upcoming season. Really excited about that. There are several players on the Chicago Bears side that I'm looking forward to seeing next week in Canton, Ohio, when I will be at the Hall of Fame game where they face the Ravens. So I'm looking forward to that and the players there. And most importantly, knowing that as far as with the NFL Regional Combine platform itself, there are 97 players that have come through that vehicle, whether through the platform, the Regional Combine, or the NFL Pro Player Combine. There's a combined conjoint effort, pretty much just the platform for the RC, and where we have 97 players. 18 of those players are rookies that came through the Regional Combine Invitational this year. I really believe that all 18 of these players will make a squad. I really believe that this talented group this past summer is very special. So I believe that all 18 of these rookies will make someone's roster spot. Four of the 18 were drafted. And amongst the 97 players, there were 11 players from the NFL regional, from the NFL pro player that actually made an NFL roster this year. Some from last year, most notable Tommy Bohannon, who was a fullback for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who scored 3 touchdowns last year and helped pave the way for the best rushing team in the NFL, meaning with what the Jaguars did last year with Leonard Fournette and the collective group of backs they had there, and knowing that Bohannon was in the midst of that, and knowing that he came through the pro player combine when he thought that his NFL career was over, but he wound up coming through there, had a stellar year last year, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he's going to do this season. And also with the remaining players from the NFL regional combine, those veterans coming back, around 69 of those players, including 4 pro bowlers from the regional combine, yes. And the 4 pro bowlers are Johnny Hekler, Greg Zuerlein, Adam Thielen, who everyone came to love last year, the top wide receiver for the Minnesota Vikings, and actually finished at 30. He was actually voted 36th on the NFL player top 10 list. And he was the first NFL regional combine player to actually be voted by his peers as one of the best players in the NFL, and Alarendo went on the waiver, the left tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers, first-time Pro Bowler. So all four of those guys will come back this year, looking to build on their Pro Bowl season from last year, and I wish those guys all the best. But we'll talk about those guys next week and the platform next week when I will be at Canton following up from the NFL Hall of Fame game. Now, today's show is special, and if you have any questions at any time, you can always shoot me a message directly to my email, which is barrybarnes@locker-report.com, on Twitter at locker_report, Instagram, lockreport100 on low caps, or on Facebook at lockerreport.com. You can always shoot me a question any time during the show or following up with a question for next week. So that's how you can reach me directly. But today's show is very special. When I was at the NFL officiating clinic in Dallas a couple of weeks ago, I had the opportunity to, you know, talk to Hall of Fame linebacker Willie Lanier. And if you're not familiar with Mr. Lanier, you can never ever look at an NFL game again. Honestly, he's one of the best players to ever put on an NFL uniform, and he was the first African-American player to play the middle linebacker position. And when he was drafted from out of college back in the mid-60s, I would talk about, you know, his journey there. He shared that, you know, the story with the officials, and also we talked a little bit more about that, you know, about his journey to the NFL, knowing the struggles that he had went through leading up towards his, I would say, his collegiate career. It was a great story. You don't know about that, but just to give you a heads up with his resume, Mr. Lanier was drafted in the 1967 NFL draft in the second round. He was the 50th overall pick for the Kansas City Chiefs. He went on to have a stellar career, where he was an 8-time All-Pro. All-Pro meaning you was the best player in your position, and he was voted 8 times for that. He was a Super Bowl champion. He's also a member of the 75th anniversary team of the NFL, and his number was also retired by the Chiefs, and his number was number 63. And one of the things that actually the main thing that Ms. Lanier emphasized at the clinic was safety. After hearing his speech and what he said to the officials and what he said to me in private, the interview, which everyone will hear in another 2 minutes, to see how he truly, truly is, not was, but is, an advocate for player safety, and how he was at the forefront in the 50s when football was really becoming a blossoming sport, where it was the sport where physicality, that's how you got your manhood, so to speak. That's how you earned your respect when playing football, by playing football, being physical and being tough. And a lot of the ways and the skill set to be able to earn that badge as a football player back then is definitely a whole lot different from now, because right now safety is in the forefront of this sport. And one of the things that the NFL is doing from top to bottom is getting the equipment to perform a certain way, and also using the fields, putting the fields together in a certain way. Most importantly, the techniques, how they're teaching, and it's starting to spread slowly to the youth football and also to the college, to the high school, then to college, and it's leading its way up to the NFL, as the NFL is being, as it always is, you know, the forefront, being the pillar, being the leader in what they do as far as the performance of the sport itself, and also now taking charge of the safety aspect of the game. And Mr. Lanier was at the forefront in the very beginning. I will tell you his story, and we also will listen to this interview and talk about and break down this interview with some great things he said in there, and we're going to go ahead and go to the interview now. When we come back, we jump right into it.
speaking with Hall of Fame linebacker Mr. William Lanier, one of the living legends that we have in our society today. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. Knowing the importance how Troy Vincent is looking at HBCU schools and their lack of involvement with the NFL as far as players getting drafted or having the opportunity to at least get a shot to go into someone's camp. In the era that you came up in, HBCUs was at the pinnacle of the institutions that the NFL had gravitated to pull out talent. And over the years, that actually has changed, that the HBCU schools are not targeted as much from NFL teams. What do you think the NFL need to do, or HBCU schools in together, what can they do to try to get those players back into the forefront of talent?
Well, really what happened is that it was just an aspect of integration and segregation. And the reality is that the surrogate black colleges held most of the black athletes in this country, mm-hmm. because integration was such that the major schools were still segregating. Mm-hmm. They weren't taking players who were African-American to their institution. So what happens is that with integration over the last 50 years, more and more of the African-Americans ended up gravitating to the big schools. They had better programs, a better capital involved. You can look at the Deep South, the Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, those schools in that area that when I came out of high school or came out of college, they didn't have any black athletes playing. Mm-hmm. You look at those rosters today when they play, they're almost all black.
Yes, sir.
And that's all of those major schools in the South, in the North, whatever. So many of the majority white schools have a tremendous amount of athletic talent that happens to be black. So the historically black colleges need to, I would say, try to do a better job of, you're not just bringing in someone who's an athlete. You're bringing in someone who has the full ability to be a success in your academic programs, to allow them to have the values of a college graduate that can be lifelong, to realize that there's a greater purpose for that person's time that they spend than just playing at a pro level. And if that is to occur, you would then have someone who has the ability to truly play well and not have identified themselves as just someone who's interested in athletics. It has to be a broader deliverable than one of a competitive view that there are numbers that you want to get at the historic black college to show that you are competing with other schools just on the athletic talent. The responsibility of historic black colleges, in my view, always happens to have been to deliver more, because many of the majority schools were not trying to deliver the whole. They were trying to deliver the athletic outcome. And whether you graduated, whether you have a successful postgraduate career, whether you went on to other things, it didn't appear that that was an equal value at some of the majority schools.
Speaking about player safety in the league, knowing that you is a part of the member of the NFL as far as in focusing on player safety in the league, a part of the committee, safety committee, what advances have you seen, I would say, over the years since you've been a part of it, the changes that the NFL has been making to make the game much safer and on not only on the professional level but also translating into youth sports?
Well, I think they start with trying to manage it for the pro level, because this is where we are. And this is where the pros, this is a big boy game. And there's a lot of risk in it from a health standpoint, safety standpoint, and trying to get those men to address it better for themselves and others in the future. If there is a trickle down, that can occur later. But you're trying to get this game changed to show that men can play it, walk away from it, have positive health benefits over their lives, and not be damaged mentally or physically by the sport. And if it's not able to be achieved, that people can walk away from it healthy, mentally, and physically, there's a risk, in my view, to its long-term survivability.
One last question. As a pioneer, as the first African-American to play the middle linebacker position, as a Super Bowl-winning defensive player with the Kansas City Chiefs, and also a Hall of Famer in college, Football Hall of Famer, if you had an opportunity to be able to talk to all the parents that has kids playing youth football today, what will be some of the things that you'll say to them, whether to encourage them to allow their kids to play, or what are the safety factors? As you were one of the pioneers of player safety, what were some of the things you would say to the parents to let them know that the game is safe and will be safe and eventually be much safer?
I would say at the time that if the person who is coaching their child is not discussing safety as one of their value propositions in the same way that they're trying to talk about playing time, opportunity, college pros, if they're not talking about safety, pull your child away and do better for him. Create groups of parents who force whoever these individuals are to take safety courses and make it a part of their presentation. And if they choose not to, you pull your children away. You protect your child as a parent. And it's your responsibility to do that. That individual who is trying to coach or present is not offering safety kind of points of reference, you shouldn't let your children play.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thank you. It has been a pleasure and honor to talk to you, Ms. Lynette. All
right.
Yes. Are you listening to Locker Talk on the radio, on the Basketball Radio Network? I'm your host, founder of Locker-Report.com, and you're listening to Locker Talk, where you'll find out NFL starts tomorrow, today. And that was the interview that I had with the Pro Football Hall of Fame linebacker, Mr. Willie Lanier, when I was attended the 2018 NFL officiating clinic in Dallas. That was, you know, definitely a privilege to talk to someone like that of that stature. And about his interview to lead up to the things that he was talking about, just to let you know where he stands, why he made the comments that he had made, and we will definitely talk about that. Mr. Lanier, you know, was born in Clover, Virginia, 1945. Now, when he was growing up, you know, in the South, so we know about the racism and the segregation that transpired on that time, you know, with racism, where it was more in your face then. And that was definitely a hard time in our, you know, our culture, I would say, with African Americans. And in relation to football, with Mr. Lanier, had a great family, strong family support. And as far as football concerned, his idol, the person he watched the most, was Hall of Fame running back Mr. Bobby Mitchell when he played for the Washington Redskins from 62 to 68. So that was the gentleman that he had watched, you know, as a young man in the NFL. So he did have some players like him and the great Jim Brown to emulate and to relate to with in regards to playing football, not so much the NFL, but just playing football. And so he had a great career in high school, and he actually was offered a full scholarship to attend Virginia State University, one of the HBCU schools that we have on the East Coast. Very good program. And he was offered a full ride at that school, but because of the segregation in the Deep South, he did not want to be a part of that. So he wanted to go somewhere up north, but he wanted to stay with an HBCU school. And so he reached out to the late, great Earl Banks, the head coach of Morgan State University, reached out to him. And during that time, when he had that conversation, he said that Mr. Lanier wanted to know what he had to do to play for his program. He said that Mr. Banks told him, son, we don't have any more scholarships, you know, to offer this year for anyone to come and play. And Mr. Lanier, as educated as he is, and as I would say, far as being a trailblazer, and you're going to hear me say that word a lot because that's who he is, a trailblazer. And he basically told Mr. Banks, and I'll quote, "I don't want a scholarship. I just want to know what I need to do to be a Bear," end quote. And so that's when Mr. Banks gave him an opportunity to come on up, trial for the team. And we know from that point on, the legend started for Morgan State, where he became a legendary player there, where they still honor him to this day, and rightfully so. Pretty much their biggest athletic figure, pretty much their biggest, you know, I would say, recognizable person that came from that institution. And so caught the attention of the NFL, of course, got drafted by the Chiefs. Like I said, got drafted in the second round, 50th overall, and was their starting middle linebacker. Now, if you're not familiar with that position, the middle linebacker is like the quarterback of the defense. And during that time, in the mid-60s now, you've seen the way how it progressed as far as the black quarterback, how for years black players were not looked at as to being good decision makers. And when you're the middle linebacker, it's the same situation. They had to make the right decisions, make sure his players are in the right position. Got to recognize offense. So that position requires someone who's not only just physically able to perform and cover the spaces they need to cover, but they haven't had some kind of intellect in knowing the game and how to approach it. And when he came in and got the starting position right away, that's when the legend started to build. But the part of the legend that led to his Hall of Fame success, we saw what he did on the field, but what led to another success was the player safety. In his very first game, he, instead of him running over the offensive lineman, instead of running him over, he said, let me just jump over this guy to get to the ball carrier. And that's what he did. He leaped over the offensive lineman. But when he came down, his head hit the knee of the back. And so, you know, he shook it off. You know, everything was fine. He finished that game, and everything was normal, no problems. The following week, as a matter of fact, he played the Chicago Bears, I believe, that second week. Before the game started, he started to feel woozy and everything. He wasn't himself. And then he wound up passing out. And when he passed out, he was almost out for about 2 hours, I believe. You know, got up to the hospital. And when he got to the hospital, that's when he had realized that he had a condition that the doctor had said that he had his brain was bleeding. And so with that injury, although it happened the previous week, it was one of those slow injuries, as far as one of those head injuries, not a concussion, but he had his brain was bleeding, and he just didn't feel the results of it till the very next week. And so when he passed out, came to, they worked on, he was fine. He sat out 2 games. And during that course of him sitting out those 2 games, that's when he started to think about the safety of the game, how to change the way his approach is going to be when he get back on the field. He was always taught, like everyone at that time with football, to lead with the head. Lead with the head first. And when he realized what happened with the head situation, that's when he changed his style, went to his teammates, told them how they should approach the game. Most of them didn't listen, of course, because it's football. That's what they've been taught. It's too late to try to change now. But he went, even talked to his opponents, you know, his other colleagues around the league, talked about the safety aspect. And clearly, most of them did not listen. So he just kept on being an example of how to approach the game by start leading with his shoulder, not his head. And there's one particular helmet that's in the Hall of Fame right now to this day that he somewhat get credit for, but he was not responsible for the act, so to speak, because he had a teammate that had a head injury, and the equipment manager for the Chiefs, name is the Bobby Yarborough. What he did was he put some, you know, he stuffed the top part of the helmet so to provide cushion for that player. And although Mr. Lanier did not tell Mr. Yarborough what to do, and although he was talking about safety in the mid-60s, when player safety was not even a discussion of a topic like how it is now, the result of him spreading the news, Mr. Yarborough, he had to have listened to what Lanier said, packed the helmet, stuffed it with some padding so the player can go out and play. And that helmet is in the Hall of Fame right now as we speak. Now, you're listening to Locker Talk with your host, Barry Barnes, founder of Locker-Sport.com. And there was a couple of things that he said in his interview. And he talked about the HBCU schools, how what separated HBCU schools compared to the major schools, or the word he was saying, he said during the interview, quote, majority schools, quote, unquote, end quote, how HBCUs, he felt as though they was required to deliver the total package, not just the athletic side, but the educational side. And when you look at the context of HBCU and the NFL now, it seems as though that the athletic part of that package has been thrown to the wayside, HBCU schools, because the majority of them, not all of them, but majority of them is not putting into the sports part where they should, because that sports piece is the part that's missing to actually showcase their talent that has some good players. Now, majority of the players are not going to go to that school, but they still have players there that can qualify and play for a major program. But because of situations at home and most likely the SAT scores, they had to go to HBCU school. So they had the educational component there, but they have to put the athletic component back into it so that our players at HBCU schools would actually have a chance to really get in front of NFL scouts to get back into the NFL. I know for a fact that the front office is really pulling on the SWAC and the MEAC as they're, you know, putting their heads together to get their attention. And that's one of the other things that I love about the NFL Regional Combine, because it gives a platform for all schools, major schools, small schools, and also HBCU schools, to have their players to come to those platforms to get in front of scouts. But we want to have scouts go to these schools in person and really pay attention on it. But the NFL scouts not going to take it serious if the HBCU schools are not taking it serious. So that's the component that HBCU needs to do in order to deliver, you know, that total package that Mr. Lanier expects HBCU schools to have. Now, Mr. Lanier, he's a member of the NFL Player Safety Advisory Committee. So his input is definitely valued in that committee. Also, he mentioned the risk of the game. The NFL is a big boy game, as he said, and there are risks. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the show, how playing football, is a risk. I mean, it's a risk in everything. It's a risk walking down the steps in the morning. It's a risk driving to work or driving to the store. It's always a risk in everything that you do. And the best thing is to control it is to put certain guidelines in place, you know, making sure that there's some things that's in place so it can limit those risks. And the NFL is no different from any other sport or any other entity or any other job. It still works the same exact way, so there are risks, and he recognizes that. And Ms. Lanier did say that if there's nothing put into the safety and help changing the whole scope of the safety in the league, then that's where we'll have problems with long-term health. Now, I will tell you, Ms. Lanier is 72 years old. This man is sharp. I tell you, I mean, he is on it. And he has said and has told me face-to-face and also then with the officials that he have no major surgeries, end quote. So for someone who played the game in the era with safety was not a topic at all. But for him to be able to recognize safety at that period of time and change his game and mold his game to a point where he was excellent and great, but still run a business, still work with the NFL, still travel as much as he's doing, still being sharp. For all those who speak against the NFL and talk about the unfortunate part and part of players who had suffered concussions and suffered other brain injuries and other issues, is real. Physical issues is real. But there are players like Ms. Lanier that did not sustain those situations and that pain. Don't make NFL or football, the game of football, into this big monster that is making all of the older players suffer, and that they all are suffering, because they all are not suffering. When you talk about the lawsuit, how certain players are getting paid because of the physical challenges they are going through right now, the NFL is taking care of those players, right, those former players right now. The only regret they have is that they did not do it a lot sooner. I hope everyone enjoyed today's show. Listening to Pro Football Hall of Fame linebacker Mr. Willie Lanier, it was great to come on and have me to interview him to play what he talked about, how he feel about the state of the game. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. If you have any more questions, please send me an email to Barry Barnes at locker-report.com, on Twitter, the locker_report, Facebook, lockerreport.com, or Instagram, and lower caps, locker report 100. Everyone tune in. We'll talk football next week. Everyone stay blessed. Thank you again.
Money Matters Wealthy Thinking with Alfred Edmond Jr.
Welcome to Money Matters Wealthy Thinking. I'm your host, Alfred Edmond Jr. Ever read a news story or watch a TV show like CNBC's American Greed and see how people are scammed out of hundreds, thousands, and even hundreds of thousands of dollars? It can be terrifying to think that there are people out there who are willing to take you for everything you have, including your entire life savings, without an ounce of remorse or regret. On this edition of Money Matters Wealthy Thinking, I share the questions you need to ask and the resources you need to check before you hand over even a dollar towards that can't-miss business or investment opportunity. There will always be scams and scammers, but if you take my advice, you will never have to become a victim. Also, if you are in one of the more than 25% of marriages who have a wife with an annual income greater than that of her husband, you definitely want to hear the third and final installment of my conversation with Dr. Dawn de la Vallade, MD, the author of She Makes More, Inside the Minds of Female Breadwinners. Dr. Dawn is focused on being a source of information, advice, and encouragement for female breadwinners and their partners who want to have a strong relationship as well as a healthy marriage. If you care about protecting both your income and your relationship, you don't want to miss what Dr. Dawn has to share. But first, protecting your finances is often a matter of what you do before you invest in anything. Avoiding financial fraud is nearly always about what you allow to happen before money ever exchanges hands. I'm a big fan of true crime reality shows. These include those In Love Today, Murdered Tomorrow shows like Fatal Attraction and Snapped, as well as the financial crime series such as CNBC's American Greed. The latter focuses largely on investment scams, including affinity fraud, relationship scams, and other schemes designed to con people out of their money. Many times, the victims are people of modest means, education, and financial sophistication. But more often than you might think, the victims are people you think would know better. Famous athletes and entertainers, prominent public figures, politicians, religious leaders, and even wealthy entrepreneurs are not immune to being conned, often out of millions of dollars. However, regardless of the particular type of scam or the demographic of its victims, they all have one thing in common: their finances, reputations, and peace of mind could have been protected by just asking a few questions and independently verifying the answers before they invested. Investment scammers count on being able to control the story. To succeed, they must have the last word on what information you receive and who you choose to trust, i.e., only them, or distrust, like your friends, family, advisors, regulators, legal authorities, etc. Nothing repels scam artists like you asking the right questions and getting the answers from people other than them or their partners. Here are five questions to ask before you invest in anything. What is the name of your banker so I can verify your financial statements? May I have your broker or business license number? What state or federal agencies are you registered with? Do you mind if I call the State Banking Commission or Department? Would you mind if I review this opportunity with my banker, attorney, or financial advisor? If a person is legit, she will immediately provide the information you seek. She will allow you to thoroughly and independently vet her credentials and history. She will also allow you plenty of time to investigate the proposed investment opportunity before you turn over a dime. However, back away and hold on tightly to your money if she refuses to answer. She may even act hurt, angry, or offended that you would even ask in order to discourage you from pressing the issue. She will likely also insist that the authorities need to be kept in the dark about this opportunity and or should not be trusted. Finally, she may try to convince you that involving others may hurt your reputation, undermine your relationships, cost you financially, put you in physical danger, or just make you look stupid. Also look out if he or she lies or provides false, misleading, or outdated information. Again, don't just take their word for it. Verify everything independently with the proper authorities, and that does not mean your friends, family, pastor, or celebrities, before you invest a dime. If she distracts and delays with excuses, again, pump the brakes. She may pressure you to move forward as an act of good faith, stressing how foolish or stupid you'll feel if you let the opportunity slip by. She may even influence others in your community, church, family, or network to exert peer pressure on their behalf to get you to bend to their wishes. If they do any of these things, refuse to do business with them forever, no matter who they are. Refuse to provide even a token investment, and do not share any of your personal financial information. At best, they are unqualified, unreliable, and unprofessional. At worst, they are cold-hearted crooks. Never forget that con artists come in every form you can imagine, from that church deacon or MBA in a three-piece suit, to your sorority sister or that hot chick at the club. They can even be, and often are, a longtime coworker, romantic interest, college classmate, neighbor, or even a relative. Scammers succeed by identifying your biggest desires, obsessions, goals, fears, and needs. These may not be about money at all, and can range from fear of being alone or craving for romance, to a need to feel closer to God or have a greater sense of self-esteem. A con artist will then focus on convincing you that she is the perfect person to get you what you desperately desire or protect you from what you desperately fear. That means to protect yourself, you must control your own emotional responses as well as access to your personal information and finances. To further educate and protect yourself against investment fraud and financial scams, check out the following resources. Fraud Aid, a nonprofit advocacy resource for fraud victims at fraudaid.com. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission at sec.gov. And the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, also known as FINRA, at finra.org. That's F-I-N as in Nancy, R-A.org. You're listening to Money Matters Wealthy Thinking. I'm Alfred Edmond Jr. We'll be back in a moment. Support for Money Matters Wealthy Thinking and the following message come from State Farm, who knows that many Americans struggle with their finances and most have never been taught how to manage them. Starting today, State Farm wants to change that by giving people the tools, help, and education they need to take control of their money, putting financial well-being within the reach of everyone. Now you can find out more at letstarttoday.com. State Farm, here to help life go right. Welcome back. And now let's hear the third and final installment of my conversation with my guest, speaker, author, and advocate for high-earning women who want healthy relationships, Dr. Dawn de la Vallade, MD. Best known for her book, She Makes More, Inside the Minds of Female Breadwinners. In addition to being a practicing physician, Dr. Dawn is on a mission to provide much-needed information, advice, and encouragement for female breadwinners who want to have strong relationships and healthy marriages, in addition to their high earning power. Listen up as Dr. Dawn shares more about how couples can protect the health of both their finances and their marriages when she makes more.
So
What's your advice to couples who are in this kind of relationship with regard to not conflict between them, because they may have a fairly healthy relationship around this topic, but their family and friends, people they go to church with, you're not really the man of the house because she's bringing in all this money, who wears the pants of the family, or maybe her father not necessarily respecting his son-in-law because his daughter is, you know, seems to be bringing in all the money. What's the advice you give to couples or female breadwinners around resisting the pressures, the influence of outside forces, including family and friends?
And that's a great question, because unfortunately it does happen. Those that love us do tend to say, quote unquote, they want the best for us. And they do look at that husband with, you know, with a side eye, you know, the one whose income doesn't match hers. And here's what I will say. This is another topic where courage has to come into the picture. She has to have, let's say it's her dad, right, who comes down on him constantly, maybe says he's, you know, an opportunist, he's a gold digger, he's a lowlife, right? He's this. I mean, we know the things that our dads may say sometimes. Here's where the courage comes in. She has to be able to set boundaries to say, okay, you know what, Dad? I know you love me. I know you care about me. This is the mate that I have chosen. I will appreciate moving forward if you do not use those derogatory comments about my husband. So I think it's about the couple, right, turning toward each other and saying, we are not going to allow these outside influences to cast judgment upon us. We're going to put up boundaries and say, we're not going to accept that sort of language. Please do not use that sort of language about my husband. And once you put up boundaries, I think people tend to respect that. Now, that doesn't mean they're not going back and talking about you behind your back, but at least they're having the respect to not say it to you, in front of you, around you. So that's number one. Number two, I would say, make sure your family or friends see the other contributions that your husband is making. So what, his check does not have the dollars and cents to match yours? This is an awesome dad. He's picking kids up from school. He's doing hair in the mornings. He's fixing lunches. He's fixing things around the home. He's the type of person who can, you know, have the flexibility to go on a family vacation versus the husband who may have the high paycheck, but he's never around. He's traveling. He's on business. He's always on his laptop. So allow people to see the contributions that your husband is making over and above the salary.
Again, you make great points, because it's about defining the entire contribution of both partners to the marriage, not just limiting it to what kind of check somebody brings home. And so often, men who are lower earners, it's like you're measured by your paycheck alone, which is a trap that too many men fall into, no matter what we make. We tie our self-esteem to money and our paychecks, which is unhealthy no matter what your relationship status is. But you also define something else that I emphasize a lot, which is, I tell people any two people can be a couple, but in a strong relationship, it's a team. If you're with your teammate, you don't let people come between you and your teammate.
Yeah.
You don't let people dump on your teammate. No, this is my teammate. And therefore, there will be some boundaries drawn. We're clear about what we both bring to the table that makes us a great team. Again, I'm a big fan of your work. I'm a big fan of your book.
Okay, well, thank you, and I appreciate your kind words about my mission and my passion and my book. For anybody who is listening who identifies with the female breadwinner, the high-earning identity, whether you're single, married, or divorced, I am, you know, creating a movement, basically. So please join me. I have a free e-guide for you. It's called Top 10 Things Female Breadwinners Need to Know About Relationships. You can get it at meetdrdawn.com/10-tips. That's meetdrdawn.com/TEN-TIPS. And once you get in my network, then you will be able to take part of all the amazing things I have coming for female breadwinners. My newest project is launching next month. It's called a Female Breadwinner Online Summit. This has never been done before, so I'm super excited about it. I have gathered experts from all different backgrounds, and our topic in these interviews is all about how the female breadwinner can maximize her loving relationships and live her best life now. So I hope that you will join me in my movement, and I'm just happy to have opportunities like this, Alfred. So I appreciate you inviting me.
Well, listen, I absolutely appreciate having you as a guest on Money Matters Wealthy Thinking. I hope you'll
make some time to be available to come back on soon. And, you know, again, thanks for sharing both your passion, your expertise, and your experience as someone who not only wrote about it and talks about it, but who lived it.
Anytime. I'd love to come back. Thank you so much.
Once again, you can get more great advice and access other resources from Dr. Dawn DeLavalade at meetdrdawn.com. That's meetdrdawn.com, where you can also download her free ebook guide, Top 10 Things That Female Breadwinners Need to Know About Relationships. And if you missed the first two installments of our conversation, check out Money Matters Wealthy Thinking podcast number 43 and 44. If you have any questions you'd like me to address, send an email to alfrededmondjr@gmail.com and I'll answer them on future editions of this podcast. That's alfrededmondjr@gmail.com. Or you can follow and direct message me on Instagram or Twitter at Alfred Edmond Jr. This is Alfred Edmond Jr. with Money Matters Wealthy Thinking. Be sure to check out my latest free ebook, Buy Love, Get Trouble, Sell Love, Get Screwed, How Decisions in Pursuit of Sex, Love, and Relationships Impact Your Career, Business, and Financial Success at grownzone.com/buy-love-get-trouble. And don't forget to subscribe to Money Matters Wealthy Thinking on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or any other podcast directory. If you like what you hear, and I know you do, take some time and leave a 5-star review. I'm Alfred Edmond Jr. at AURN.com. Thanks for listening. Come back for more next week.
Money Matters Wealthy Thinking, a product of American Urban Radio Networks.
Hey there, this is L.A. Bachelor, host of the Bachelor Pad show from the Bachelor Pad Network, inviting you to tune in on Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, for the Donaldson File with your hosts Tom Donaldson and Coco Cosney. They bring politics and other perspectives from the left and from the right. The Donaldson Files every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network.
Tune in every Tuesday to Empowering Moments with T.T. Jenkins. The show touches on topics of race, culture, politics, and religion, and great guests. Listen every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, exclusive on blogtalkradio.com and the podcast at thebachelorpadnetwork.com.
Devoted so much time to find you faithful, boy. I nearly lost my mind. Drive past your house every night in an unmarked car, wondering what she had on me to make you break my heart. Yeah, I'm so gone. What am I doing wrong to make you stay out all night and not take the call? What does she have over me to make you not think to call? Like I ain't worth it. Make me wanna ride past your house to sit. Ooh. kick down your doors and smack your chick just to show your Monica not having it. So in love with you like a drug addict. You treat me so unreal. What she do, I do better. What she did to make you love her.
y'all them skill artists. Thunderball, some give it to, some give it to, some give it to our girls. 5 million and 40 naughty shorty. Baby girl, all my girls, all my girls. Thunderball say, well, woman, the way the time cool, I wanna be keeping you warm. I got the right temperature for shelter you from the storm. Hold on, girl, I got the right tactics to turn you on. And girl, I wanna be the papa, you can be the mom. Oh-oh. Because of the girl, them broke out from the floor. From your door, I know what face performer. From your door, I know man, where can't turn you on. Girl, make I see you when them upon ya. Can't stand for the long, not eat no yam, no steam fish, no, no green banana. But down in Jamaica, we give it to your heart like a sauna. Well, woman, the way the time cold, I wanna be keeping you warm. I got the right temperature for shelter you from the storm. Hold on, girl, I got the right tactics to turn you on. And girl, I wanna be the papa, you can be the mom. Oh, oh. Pumper exposed and girl, you got it just out. But you know we ain't stuck, girl, you're impressed out. And if it is out of me, if it is out, cause I got the remedy for make you this out. Me have a flat to become a God bless out. And girl, if you want it, you have to contest out. And a life where we need set speed, if it is to my test out. Well, woman, the way the time cold, I wanna be keeping you warm. I got the right temperature for shelter you from the storm. Hold on, girl, I got the right tactics to turn you on. And girl, I wanna be the papa, you can be the mom. I'm crazy now, this straight drop it and a Bridget and Flavor show. Oh, oh. Time for a make baby now, to stop boy like you, I get shady, yo. Oh, oh. Woman, don't blame me now, cause I'm a fist and fat, not greedy, yo. Oh, oh. My loving is the way to go, my loving is the way to go. Well, woman, the way the time cold, I wanna be keeping you warm. I got the right temperature for shelter you from the storm. Hold on, girl, I got the right tactics to turn you on. And girl, I wanna be the papa, you can be the mom. It's right here, the spark is right here, keep it undercover. Come in love, all your fits in your blouse and your fat in your jeans, I'm a wild discover. Everything about you, baby girl, can you hear when me utter? Well, woman, the way the time cold, I wanna be keeping you warm. I got the right temperature for shelter you from the storm. Hold on, girl, I got the right tactics to turn you on. And girl, I wanna be the papa, you can be the mom.
Calling all wild out squadron, come report to duty. Ladies with the beauty, come shake that booty. Yeah, hey, girl.
Break up, break up.
Rockwise.
Break up, break up.
Miami ladies.
Break up, break up.
Rockwise.
Break up, break up.
NYC girl.
Break up, break up.
Rockwise.
Break up, break up.
LA ladies.
Break up, break up, break up. Break up, break up.
Yo, yo. Pass me the night, don't make me get hypo. Y'all day enough, give me one for the night, yo. DJ, keep the mix them tight, yo. NSC and Red Bull make me get psycho. Dirty dancing, come be don't polite, yo. Feel it among some left on me right, yo. Make the girls get high like a kite, yo. One thing me want you to right now. Y'all move, what's you waiting for? Pop is the tension of a girl on the dance floor. Do you think, cause you know you're secure? Y'all just broke out, cause you're out to the core. Yo, move, what you waiting for? Pop is the tension of a girl on the dance floor. Do you think, cause you know you're secure? Y'all just broke out, cause you're out to the core. Yo,
break up, break up.
Back where we used to meet, and I took off just you and me. Passion was all up in our veins. We were letting our frustration burn. If the temperature was chilling, we was wrapped up in each other. And boy, I really miss those days.
Yes, I do.
And I haven't been feeling that way either. Hesitation, baby, don't let him. The next time you're here in my
And I haven't been feeling that way.